To reach this lost civilization, science had followed a trail through burning desert sands, through the roaring avalanches of Mount Kuitara, and finally, deep into the bowels of the earth.
People, welcome to episode 26 of the 13 o'clock podcast.
Yep, 26.
Yeah. And actually, this is going to post on Valentine's Day. We should have done like a more Valentine kind of theme. Oh, well. Yeah. We weren't thinking about it. I guess this could kind of be tied into a Valentine theme.
No, it could.
Yeah. Before we get into it, I just want to give a shout out to Project Entertainment Network, as I usually do, and encourage everyone to go to their Patreon and give them a buck or two.
Yeah.
Also want to give a special shout out to the Necrocasticon podcast, which did an interview with me this past Thursday, which I believe is going to post on Monday, although don't quote me on that.
Right.
But I'll let everybody know probably on next week's show when the one with me is posted.
Today's show is about underground.
We're going underground.
We're gonna take you underground today.
Yeah. So see how I said how that might tie in with Valentine's Day? Going down Valentine's Day?
Oh, gosh. <Yeah. laughs>
Right. It's a stretch, I admit.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're going to put on our little mining helmets and we're going to go spelunking.
I got the idea for this show because a while back, I guess it's been about 4 or 5 years, maybe somebody in the audience might remember this. There was a program about mines. And there was the program showed a mining town. I think it was a bauxite mine. And the town was in the mine. And it was abandoned sometime in the 50s. It was the weirdest thing. It looked like you were standing outside in a housing complex, but it was actually inside the mine. And they went in there and they showed, they went inside all the apartments. There were huge parking lots. There were street lights. And the parking lot was filled with cars from the 50s. And it just kind of creeped me out that shit is still underneath there, just, in silence, total darkness, cars and whole neighborhoods in this huge bauxite mine. It was just weird.
Yeah. And actually, I was looking to find that because I was going to talk about it on the show, but I couldn't really find anything about it.
I forgot where I saw it. Maybe somebody will remember it in the audience.
Yeah, because we've been looking for it because I'm kind of curious to see that. But yeah, we decided to just do a whole kind of general creepy or strange things that were discovered underground or that are still underground.
And things that can go underground.
Yeah, things of that nature. So we're kind of going to cover, several different topics. Shit we thought was interesting.
Yeah, I saw a podcast one time about a woman. She was a caver. And she was one of those deep cavers where they'll actually go straight down, like far down as the Empire State Building is tall. And they were going in unexplored caves. And she had a story where they evidently went in one and they found a huge underground lake. And then they went way deep down in there. And on the shores of the lake, it had kind of like sandy shores. And they saw huge footprints of like a lizard that must have stood about 2 or 3 feet tall.
And it walked on two legs?
Walked on two legs, evidently. Ooh. They never did find it, but it was way down underneath that. I think she said it was about 3 feet tall.
It wouldn't surprise me one bit. We don't know what the hell's going on under there.
Man.
I saw The Descent. You saw The Descent. There could be all kind of like creepy animals.
And what she said, that actually wind would blow up from underneath the ground. There's weird pressure differentials.
Yeah.
And that in certain places, water falls from the ceiling like it would rain, you know? And it's just bizarre hearing about what's underneath the ground.
Yeah. That is pretty weird. But that's where we got the idea for the show. We were taking one of our little 3 mile walks and we got to talking about that podcast because I heard part of it too. And I was like, ooh, what a great theme for a show, and we can like kind of cover a lot of different shit on it.
Yeah, so I put Jenny on it to dig up some stuff weird stuff that was discovered underground.
Yeah, so we thought that was interesting. Now, since we need a vehicle to go underneath the ground.
Yeah.
Tom, what are we riding in?
We're going to ride in a subterrane. Subterranes kind of go back to the 1800s, like Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Yeah.
It's usually like a spherical kind of or it's that cylindrical type craft with a big drill on the front of it and treads, and it can bore underneath the ground.
Yeah.
Tell us about subterranes.
Well, see, it comes from submarine, which goes underwater, but subterrane goes under
the ground.
The ground. Right. Now, these turned up in fiction.
Right.
Although it's actually not entirely certain where any, whether any of them were made in reality.
Right.
Now, they do have tunnel boring machines. You're right. Obviously.
They're like subterranes, but not really.
Right. A subterrane is distinguished by being mobile and being like independent. It doesn't need like a platform. It doesn't need. Now, they're supposed to be nuclear powered, aren't they?
Yeah, there was a evidently a Soviet design.
Yeah.
Where they would use a nuclear reactor to heat up, it was lithium, some kind of a liquid lithium or something. Yeah. To like 1500 degrees, and the tip of the subterranean would get red hot, and because it had treads on it like a tank, and it was big, you know, this thing's like the size of 8 or 9 boxcars, you know, for a train, it could press forward against a wall or, you know, stone, and just by heat and pressure alone bore through it and leave a glass smooth tunnel, and you don't have to throw any dirt or debris out. So
right.
It's a way of making a tunnel without having to move a bunch of dirt.
Yeah, to get rid of all the dirt that you're leaving behind.
Which is like a dead giveaway that you've made a tunnel.
Right.
And it's been rumored that militaries going back to the Cold War and beyond were very interested in subterranes. Because the military in the past has made secret tunnels. And some of them are declassified. One of them went from the White House all the way to, I think, downtown New York. And it was a train underneath there, so the president could get to New York, and that was during World War II. So I always kind of thought, you know, I'd heard these rumors that whatever you see on the surface map, you know, in terms of the highway system, that basically that's what it looks like under the ground too. If you were to add up all the mine shafts, all the military tunnels, even old abandoned subway systems, there's a lot of stuff down there.
Oh yeah, I'm sure there is.
And anybody who ever saw what was that movie, Dr. Strangelove?
Yeah.
You know, at the end, when they realized that the doomsday machine had gone off, they started to talk about, well, maybe we should go down to a mine shaft with like a 10-to-1 male to female ratio, and we'll be able to reseed the earth when the war was over type of
thing. Ew, reseed.
Reseed the earth.
Gross.
So it would lead me to believe that the military superpowers, you know, the U.S. and the Soviet Union probably had done a lot of undermining. You know,
yeah, I'm sure.
Where there's a lot of under, because how could you depend on your interstate system and your freeway system in the event of a nuclear exchange?
Yeah, I mean,
I think that they probably would have connected all your military bases.
Yeah.
With subterranean trains, train lines or roads.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was in the service for 4 years at Fort Campbell. And there's, for any of you servicemen out there to know, I got at least one. You know that there's some weird stuff out in the back 40, which is, you know, the training areas. There's supply connexes. There's underground stuff. It wouldn't surprise me if there were secret underground train stations underneath there that were kind of like in mothball. So in the event of emergency, you could get one division underground and ship it out to another military base, you know, possibly thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
On the U.S. continent. It makes sense that they had the money and they had the technology.
That's what I mean. And if you
so
had,
it probably is.
If you had the means, it would be dumb not to do that.
Yeah. I think they probably
because
did.
It seems like the most obvious thing to do. You can move so much stuff without anyone seeing you and all this other kind of shit.
You're not dependent on roads.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, the roads would have been totally jam-packed full of vehicles in the event of a nuclear exchange.
Yeah, you'd have all the hoi polloi. You need to have some kind of like underneath thing where you could just go underneath everybody.
Right, but that would all be classified.
Yeah.
So it was probably dubbed with subterranes. Evidently from some of the stuff that I had read, subterranes, if they exist, could probably theoretically bore a few miles a day.
Yeah.
And they didn't necessarily have to be manned. They could be robotic. You just program them to go in a direction.
And like I said, there's no proof anyone actually made one. They think the Russians might have made one.
Yeah.
They don't know if it worked correctly or not. And they're actually, in 1972, one was patented in the U.S., but they don't know if they ever built it or not.
They probably either built a subterranean or drilling type machines. Well, you know, you have boring machines to make tunnels, something along that lines.
Yeah.
The boring machines might end up being better than
that's
a subterranean.
What I think ended up happening.
Right.
Because, I mean, the downfall of the Subterrane is supposedly all the energy that it takes to run it.
Has to be nuclear.
And, yeah, it pretty much has to be
nuclear. But nuclear isn't a big deal underground.
Yeah, true.
It's a lot safer to run nuclear-powered stuff underground than it is, say, in the ocean. And you have nuclear-powered submarines, and you have nuclear-powered, aircraft carriers. So, they probably did it, but if they did it, it would be classified. They wouldn't tell us about it.
Well, while we're on the subject of underground military shit, I actually had a couple. There were a couple like of these underground, like nuclear Cold War kind of bunkers.
Okay.
I mean, there's tons of them.
I'm more vague now.
But the okay.
Hear that sound, people? You get people suddenly, oh man, is he vaping? Yeah, I'm vaping.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jenny vapes too.
Yeah, I do. But I don't usually do it on microphone because I'm closer to the microphone than you are.
You I get bored, away. You know. I start getting fidgety.
Yeah.
Get antsy.
You are very antsy.
Gotta get down there and take a vape. No, I didn't mean to step on your conversation. Just get back to work.
Anyway, so yeah. So, you know, all around the world, like I said, underground military bases, particularly during World War II, the Cold War and stuff like that, a lot of that shit was kind of built because, you know, they thought there was going to be a nuclear strike. Now, probably one of the best known ones, and it was actually only declassified in, I believe, 2004. It was built in the 1950s, and it is underneath the quaint English market town of Corsham in Wiltshire.
Okay.
And it is known as the Burlington Bunker.
Yeah.
35 acres.
Big.
Completely underground, known as the Cold War City.
Yeah.
Like I said, they built in the 1950s. They built it, radiation-proof, bomb-proof, poison gas-proof.
Mm-hmm.
And it was big enough to house about 4,000 people right. from the government. You know, it wouldn't just be random motherfuckers. Right. It'd be important people.
Right. That way the government couldn't be decapitated by a nuclear
strike. Right, exactly. About 60 miles of roads it has.
Right.
And, you know, obviously it's going to have all the stuff that the surface world is going to have that you're going to need. It's going to have, you know, laundry rooms. It's going to have a cafeteria. It's going to have a hospital. Second largest phone exchange in Britain. It also has a tiny little TV studio in there. You know, so the government, in case, you know, anyone was left alive on the surface, they'd be able to like be on TV and go, hey, we're down here. Ha ha. And, because it's England, there's also, of course, a pub called the Rose and Crown.
Okay.
And it used to be that there was, the London to Bristol Railway, there used to be like a secret line, that would go to this particular bunker so that the royal family could get in there. Cause of course we need to preserve them at all costs. But, you know, it had an underground lake. It was climate controlled, whole fucking deal.
Yeah. Washington DC has the same thing. The White House has many underground tunnels. So you can leave the White House and get into an underground secure train system.
Yeah.
That civilians can't get to.
Right.
To get the president into out of Washington, D.C. as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
To military.
So this was the same kind of deal. Like I said, it was actually a secret until 2004 when it was declassified. And the creepy thing is it was never used.
Yeah.
So if you go down there now, there's like all this boxes of like, you know, tea sets and like various, you know, razors and things like that for people. And it's just boxes of them that are not open, that are like unused and stuff. But
we had something similar to that underneath a hotel.
They never
used it. Yeah, you went to a, I think it was a big convention type center that they had in the hotel, or it was a theater, I don't remember. And there was a false wall that you could open up.
Yeah.
That showed a series of elevators, and those elevators went down underneath the ground, and it was just a big underground facility, like something out of a submarine, where thousands of people could be down in there for months and months. But they declassified it and decommissioned it because power generation was based on oil, which was antique by today's standards, because you can have little nuclear power plants now, you know, like the ones that drive submarines. So it was, you know, they became obsolete quickly. Technology advances, you know, rapidly nowadays.
Right.
So and, that's usually what happens to them.
Yeah, similar kind of thing. And actually the same thing ended up happening with the Burlington Bunker. Eventually, you know, our nuclear arsenal got so high tech that, you know, by the time you found out that nuclear bombs were coming, you wouldn't have time to get to the bunker.
They got like a 4-minute warning, I think.
Yeah, you get like a 4-minute warning. Pretty much all you can do then is kiss your ass goodbye.
Yeah, you couldn't get enough people in there quick enough.
Right. So there's no way to do it. So they just closed it up. They never used it. And like I said, it was declassified in 2004, and they actually tried to sell it off.
Yeah.
You know, for commercial use. So, you know, they're getting people like, you know, let's open a nightclub down there. Let's open a wine cellar down there. Things like that. And along similar lines, there is the same thing underneath Beijing, China.
Yeah.
And this is known as Dixia Cheng, or sometimes known as the Underground Great Wall.
Okay.
And this was actually built in the 1970s, and it was almost completely dug by hand by volunteers, quote unquote.
Yeah, I just heard about this one when you told me about it. I didn't know about this one.
Yeah. And so, you know, they had citizens volunteering, like I said, to build this. And it was built sometime in the 70s. It took several years. It's pretty large, about 33 square miles of underground catacombs. And they know of 90 separate entrances to this underground network that were kind of hidden, like in the backs of houses and shops and stuff like that, which I always thought that was so cool.
Did the people that live there knew?
See, I don't know.
Did they know? Okay.
Maybe not. Like if it was,
hands a couple times.
Yeah, like by the time, if you just bought a house and nobody said, hey, there's a nuclear bunker back there behind that wall, if you want to check it out, you know, I'm sure that it kind of became...
Imagine a lot of that stuff got sealed off, though, as time went on.
It did, probably.
It fell into disuse. It was another thing that became obsolete pretty quick.
Yeah. And, you know, this was a similar kind of thing to the British one. It had, like, barbershops underneath, had a movie theater, had a roller skating rink, of all things. Had a place where you could grow mushrooms. And, again, never used. Just built in case there were air raids or what have you. And, then, you know, kind of fell into disuse and people forgot it was there. And in 2000, they actually opened it as a tourist attraction, parts of it anyway. So, for a while, you could kind of go in there and look around, and there are a few pictures of it. And then in 2008, they reclosed it again so they could revamp it a little bit. Yeah. So I don't know if they're ever going to reopen it to the public.
Right.
To look at.
They wanted to make it an amusement park or something, didn't they?
Yeah, something like that. Right. And, you know, there's already like a couple little shops and shit like that down there. Little portraits of Mao Zedong.
Well, this is the recent stuff. Is that all the recent stuff that we have? A lot of the stuff we've just talked about from memory.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I kind of wanted to go into the military bunkers first because we were talking about
the subterranean. Oh, you got more of
those? No, those were just the two.
Okay.
Those were just the two. But then I wanted to talk a little bit about a couple of the really vast, like, underground cities that underlie the a region of Turkey.
Yeah, tell them how they discovered this.
The Cappadocia region.
Yeah, this is a good story.
So, in 1963...
Imagine this shit.
In 1963, there's this man in Turkey. The province is called Nevşehir. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Maybe not. And he decides he's going to do a little home renovation.
Yeah.
Knocks out a house in his wall, or a wall in his house. Yeah. Duh. Okay. That's okay. And he knocks out a wall in his house, and there's another room back there that he didn't know about.
Imagine that. Hey, there's more to my house.
So, yeah, he's like, what the hell is this? So upon further exploration, he finds that it isn't simply one room. It is an entire network of rooms and tunnels that go far down into the earth.
Staircases and, yeah.
And
turns out it's a whole city.
It turns out it's a gigantic city.
Now imagine what that would be like. You're in your house. You're not suspecting
anything. I love this
kind
of shit. I've written stories
like this.
You knock
a wall out and there's more to your house and your house is connected to an underground city.
Right.
That no one set foot in centuries.
It's creepy enough to like find, like, ooh, a secret room.
Yeah.
But then you find out what he had discovered was the very famous underground city of Derinkuyu.
Right.
And it's basically, it goes down about 200 feet.
Yeah.
And it's several layers, like several floors down.
Yeah. We got pictures of it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking. And at one time, it was like large enough to, parts of it could accommodate about 20,000 people.
Yeah.
And it was forgotten about until 1963. I think it was used up until about the 1920s, but then it was kind of forgotten about.
Okay, then they boarded
when they built some new shit.
Yeah, people forgot about it.
But the interesting thing about this region of Turkey, the Cappadocia region, is that most of it, it's made of like, it was covered in volcanic ash like millions of years ago. Mm-hmm. So all the rock around there is like really soft, this soft tuff, like the volcanic ash. Yeah. And so you can dig in it like fairly easily.
Okay.
So people have been digging these underground cities since like the early Middle Ages.
All right.
And Darin Kuyu, they think it's probably built by the Phrygians. Some people say the Hittites, like, farther back, but right. they think it's probably the Phrygians.
That's 1,500 years or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Right.
And...
Or no, that's 1,500 BC.
Isn't yeah, it? Well, they said Hittites? 7th, 8th century the Phrygians.
Okay.
7th, 8th century BCE.
Okay.
Hittites were earlier, 15th
century
BCE.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about Darin Kuyu is that, I mean, it's like I said, it's super huge and it's like 5 to 8 stories down. They had wells, they had air shafts, and they had big round rocks that you could use to like roll in front of each level, like to keep people kinda, from kinda coming
like the,
down there.
Kind of like the vault door out of Fallout.
Yeah. Big it's round like door. Shit like that.
Right.
Yeah. And this is like from the fucking Middle Ages. Man.
Yeah.
And people were like, I mean, originally, the people that originally started digging them, they started digging down the earth and they started keeping food stores down there, you know, because the temperature was constant. And then after a while, like when invading hordes would come or something like that, they said, well, shit, we should just like live down here.
Yeah.
Because they can't see us and, you know, and they would, make these little narrow passages. So then if the invading hordes came down there, then they would have to go through these little narrow things and they could just like stab them with swords while they were coming through there.
Yeah. If you can get the enemy in a choke point where they can only come in through maybe 2 abreast or 1 at a time, you could have 10 guys hold off 10,000.
Yeah. You could just be sitting there just poking them as they come through the door.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's like, I have, and in the YouTube video, I think there's like a little map that's drawn of like all the parts that you can visit. Cause you can actually, tourists can't actually go down into part of it. All of it has not been excavated. But they think that this region of Turkey is just like riddled with all these underground cities that they don't even know about. Only 6 of them have been partially excavated. They think there might be hundreds.
Okay.
And along that line, right around that same area, actually, in 2013, there were, they were tearing down these, this housing development right around, this castle in, Nevşehir. And they were going to build new apartment buildings there. This was in 2013. And while they were digging them out, they found another underground city.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, they've only just started excavating it in 2014. But if the geological surveys and stuff like that are accurate, then this place is like 5 million square miles.
Wow.
They think it's that big.
5 million square miles?
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. So.
That sounds too big. You sure?
Wait a minute. Let me see. That's what it said, right? That's what it said, right? 5 million square feet. Square feet. Not square miles. Okay.
I was thinking, wait a minute. Hold on, man. This thing goes to the moon?
It goes to the moon. 5 million square feet. Sorry, it's not that impressive. It doesn't go all the way to another planet. Okay. 5 million square feet. And they think it might be as deep down as 371 feet. They're not entirely sure. But if that is accurate, then it is the largest underground city.
Yeah.
It is the largest underground city. And no one's lived in that for a long time. But it probably came from around the same time period, around the Middle Ages. And, actually, why don't we take a break right now? And when,
it's time already?
Yeah, pretty much. We're about the halfway point. And when we come back, I want to talk about, some kind of more mysterious things. Like this stuff is cool, but it's like they pretty much know what that was for.
Right. None of this stuff is just, you know, like appeared out of nowhere.
Right.
You know, these are cities and defensive positions and bunkers, you know,
mines.
But this next stuff coming up is, you know.
Yeah, we kind of want to talk about a little more.
Yeah, this is a little more mysterious.
Mysterious type of thing. Right. So we're going to take a break and we will be right back in just a few minutes.
It was a time when we raced to the TV guide to see what was playing on Monster Movie Matinee that Saturday afternoon and in some cities that evening. It was all about werewolves, vampires, giant lizards, and those great Japanese monster movies. Relive it all every week as Jim Adams and Mark Maddox bring you Monster Attack. Monster Attack takes a look at those classic monster movies that we all grew up loving. Join us every week on Monster Attack, exclusively on the Project Entertainment Network.
Subculture Corsets and Clothing is our favorite store for unusual clothing, shoes, and accessories. They offer a wide selection of men's and women's clothing at great prices. Subculture also offers a cool selection of shoes and accessories. Steampunk, gothic apparel, retro, corsets, and so much more at Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Check out Subculture online at subculturecorsets.com. That's subculturecorsets.com. Make sure you use the discount code 13O'Clock for a 10% discount. Subculturecorsets.com or visit their store in Jacksonville, Florida, just off I-95.
Hollow Earth, graphic design by Jenny Ashford. Specializing in posters and flyers. Special rates for bands and artists. Quick turnaround times. Books and CD covers. Consultations through email or Skype. Logos and packaging. Payment through PayPal. Ads and promo materials. Satisfaction guaranteed. Visit the Facebook page at Hollow Earth Design or email hecate80@hotmail.com.
The Necrocasticon, the podcast that blends horror and heavy metal properties with a common connection, brought to you by hosts Token Tom Glock, Max X, Smoking Walt Hades, and Azrael Mordecai. Featuring interviews and more with the stars of metal and horror. The Necrocasticon, Mondays on Project Entertainment Network.
Okay, and we're back. Now, before we get into the really weird stuff, I do have to mention this. Now, this place is underground, and we know what it's for. It's been in continuous use since the 13th century. I just wanted to mention it because it is wicked cool, and there are some kick-ass pictures of it all over the fucking internet. Yeah, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right. I'm not Polish, but it's the Wielicka Salt Mine.
Yeah.
And it's in Krakow, and it's been a salt mine from the 13th century until about 2007, producing table salt. Now, the coolest thing about it, it's super huge, but the coolest thing about it is that the whole part of it is like people that work down there and shit like that, like would make carvings.
Yeah.
Like out of the salt, like in the walls. There's like a Last Supper down there.
Yeah, it's a work of art, the whole thing.
It's gorgeous.
It looks like Grand Central Station almost.
It really does. Yeah. And actually, if you look, and like I said in the YouTube video, I wanted to show some of the pictures of it too. There are chandeliers.
Yeah.
The crystals on those chandeliers are rock salt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it's super gorgeous and you can go down there shit. They even have like weddings and shit down there and all that kind of stuff. But,
you had to mention it though.
I did have to mention it.
Not quite mysterious, but.
Yeah, but I just wanted to mention that before we got into the super mysterious shit.
Right.
Okay. Now we're getting into the weird shit.
Yeah.
Now, all across Europe, they have been finding these mysterious tunnels. And they're obviously man-made. They're not entirely sure what time period they're from, although probably from the Middle Ages, you know, judging by a few of the coal deposits and things like that that they found in there. And they call them Erdstall.
Erdstalls, yeah.
Now,
there are thousands of them.
There are about 2,000 known Erdstall tunnels around Europe. Most of them, there are about 700 of them
Germany
in,
and
in
Austria.
Bavaria, about 500 of them in Austria.
Okay.
There's some in France. There's some in the UK also.
Okay. What makes them so weird?
The weird thing about these is that they're not sure what they're for.
Okay.
And why there are so many of them.
All right.
Like I said, they can't really reliably date them because there aren't really any archaeological artifacts in there? Like,
they're old. You can tell by the way that they're built.
Yeah.
They're old. But what's weird is that they're just one tunnel that leads to another tunnel. You either have to go up or you go down.
Yeah.
And you have to go through these little tiny choke points to go from one tunnel to the next.
Right. The weird thing about them is that, one, there aren't any of them that they found that are, like, wider than a couple of feet.
Yeah.
And some of them are only, like, 4'7", like, right, less than 5 feet high.
And rarely do they open up into a room.
No, they don't.
I think it's
don't.
Just one straight
just
tunnel
tunnels.
Connected to another tunnel.
And then to connect to another tunnel, they have these things called slip-outs.
Yeah.
Which are basically like, it's basically a hole like in the top. Mm-hmm. And you have to climb up through this hole.
Little tight hole.
A little tight hole that's only as big around as a small person.
Yeah. And then there's another tunnel.
And then there's another tunnel up above it.
Right.
And the creepy thing is that these Urdstalls only have one entrance.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the entrance will be like hidden, like behind a bush or a little, like it'll be out in the wilderness somewhere. And, you know, or like behind a rock or in a cave or something.
Some people believe that they were built by goblins.
Yeah. In Austria, that's the legend that they were built by goblins or by elves because they're so small. And they think, like in a couple of them, they think they found like some kind of carving thing that looked like it might be a seat.
Yeah, like a bench.
But then
or a
they're
seat.
Like, why would anybody want to sit in the middle of that?
Yeah. So there's all these little theories about what they are. They're not a defensive position because if you went in there, all you had to do is just build a fire at the mouth of it. You'd burn all the
oxygen
out.
And everyone was just suffocating
just
in there.
In there.
Right. Yeah.
So they don't seem to be storage because they're not roomy enough to store
and
anything.
Some of them are below the water line and they flood sometimes.
Some of them flood, so they don't know what they are.
Yeah, it's like pretty much the only thing they
And they're
can
big.
Think of.
How big are they? How many tunnels do they... What's the average size?
Well, like I said, some of them are not very long. Like some of them are only 160 feet long.
Okay.
You know, some of them go on for a while, but it's like... It's not like they're leading from one place to another place.
Yeah.
Pretty much the only thing they can come up with is maybe they had some kind of like spiritual significance.
Like a ceremonial.
Like it was some kind of ceremonial, like right. crawling through the birth canal type of thing. Like a rebirth.
But why would you need so many of them?
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's what's so weird about them. And there's like a whole group of people, like experts in various fields that are trying to figure out like what these things are for. And pretty much everything they come up with. Doesn't sound, yeah, it's like, what could they possibly be for? They're all over the place.
And what's funny is that there's no ventilation. You couldn't put a bunch of people in there, they'd suffocate.
Right. And they're not big enough anyway. Like I said, they're just these little tight
And they are man-made.
Tunnels.
So
yeah.
It's on you to figure that out, folks.
So, yeah, nobody knows. Yeah. Nobody knows. So if anybody can find out and can, like, think of any, I can't think
what
of
what a Urdstall is.
Yeah, and why there are so many. Like, right. Why did we need them? And they're all over Europe.
And why in the Middle Ages? That it seems like that'd be something Stone Age.
Right.
That some real dumb fuckers would make.
You know, some real dumb fuckers. That's another thing. That was another theory they came up with that, well, maybe like people in the Middle Ages weren't that bright and they were like trying to build houses underground and they're like, oh, we can't breathe down here. Fuck that. And they left it. But it's like.
But why those little slip outs? Why those little choke points?
It's like that seemed like a very deliberate, like we need to make this thing to go up to this higher tunnel and this little hole. And why wouldn't you make it bigger? I don't understand.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be bandits or anything like that because they'd hollow it out and make rooms.
Right.
Where you could actually use.
That's what I mean. Why on earth?
Weird. Maybe it was a fad. Kids were getting high making them. I don't know.
Kids were getting high and making them.
Back in the Middle Ages.
You know, at this point, that's as good a theory as any.
My theory is it's something ceremonial.
Well, that's pretty much all it could be.
Yeah.
Because they don't seem terribly practical in any other application.
And they may be much older than they think that they are.
Yeah.
I think they might be Stone Age.
The only reason they think Middle Ages is because in a few of them, they found particular like coal deposits or, you know, particular things that were kind of embedded in the wall where it looked like it was smoothed out.
Yeah.
And they dated those to around the Middle Ages.
Hmm.
They think probably the newest ones are like 12th century, but they think they went out back for hundreds of years. So what are they for? No one fucking knows. Maybe goblins did build them.
Goblins and elves.
Or maybe, like, I think somebody said that maybe they made them as, like, little houses for demons and shit. Like, to put the demons down in there.
Maybe.
And maybe they could close off one end and go, see, I trapped the demons.
But that's Middle Ages. That would have been considered, like, witchcraft. probably to do that, huh?
Yeah.
To make things for demons.
To make, well, yeah, you never know.
To get rid of demons?
That's what I mean. You were like flushing them down the holes.
Why isn't it mentioned in history? Why isn't it mentioned in any of the books from the time?
That's another weird thing is that no record of its construction exists or why they would be there. Like in no known manuscript.
That could only mean that it was something that they took for granted.
Yeah, maybe they didn't. Maybe they didn't think it was odd.
They didn't think it was odd. It wasn't worth mentioning.
Yeah.
Weird.
That is pretty weird. But anyway, okay. So, if any of y'all know or have any theories about what those could be, then let us know because we're kind of interested. So our next underground thing. This you told me about this, and I had forgotten all about this.
Yeah, this is one of my favorites.
Okay. So the legend goes.
Tell it.
That Ivan the Terrible.
That's right. Ivan the Terrible was a bad motherfucker. You know that?
Yeah.
He was kind of like the. I don't know. Go ahead. I was going to say he was the Russian version of Samuel L. Jackson, basically.
you think everybody is the X version of Samuel L. Jackson?
Yeah, yeah. He was like the Russian version of Samuel L. Jackson. The other day. Because he is one bad motherfucker.
Yeah, I guess he was.
Yeah.
But evidently, I mean, well, not evidently. They're pretty much sure that Ivan the Terrible had a very vast and very valuable library.
Got it from his wife.
Well, no, it was his grandfather's.
His grandfather's wife.
Yeah, his grandfather's wife. She was like a Byzantine princess.
Yeah, they got it from...
And she brought a bunch, and then he inherited them.
Books that came from the Library of Constantinople, I believe.
And the Library of Alexandria.
And Alexandria. Okay.
So they say.
So they say.
Now, he had this vast, beautiful library. Some of the books were like bound in gold and all this other kind of stuff. But when Ivan the Terrible died, they couldn't figure out what happened to the library.
There have been some stories, though.
And people have been looking for it since the 17th century.
One of the stories is that Ivan the Terrible had all of the books transported to a network of tunnels that had been there for centuries that led out of the Kremlin.
Right.
All right. And that he had them all walled up in a room and then had all of the workers who did the walling up killed to hide the library. And I don't remember exactly the details why. I think fires had something to do with it. And also there was a bunch of inner turmoil inside the state and wars were going on. And he was afraid that the library would fall into the wrong hands.
Right.
But he was also having it translated.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, Ivan the Terrible was a great scholar. He loved to read. And he wanted to read all these books. Now, one of the things that interested me so much in this case is I read a list, and I don't know if you have it there, but I read a list, this was a while back, of the books that were supposedly in this collection, and they were absolutely amazing. And some of these titles ended up being confirmed later. They were, first of all, different versions of the Bible, stuff that the Roman Church didn't want out.
Right.
Okay. That was one of them. Also, different versions of like Suetonius, you know, ancient Roman historians. And this was evidently different history books, ones that we don't have.
Yeah.
And it was just a lot of neat books. It would have been like getting your hands on alternate histories of Europe. Because the history that we know of Europe actually was kind of sanitized by the Roman Church.
Well, yeah, they got rid of a lot of books. They purged them out of the record.
Right. These are pre-Christian books.
And we only know of them because sometimes they're referred to in other texts.
And some of these authors were like classic authors, like different books by Plato that we don't have.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. But anyway, if we could find those books, it would just be a treasure trove. It would be priceless.
Yeah. So like I said, the story goes,
and there were thousands of these books.
Yeah.
Thousands of
them. That they might still be under the Kremlin.
Right.
Now, like I said, people have been looking for it since the 17th century. Probably best known, most recent person was Ignatius Stiletsky. And that was pre-war, like early 1930s. He believed that it was, that the books were hidden under the Kremlin in some hidden tunnels under there.
Now, the Kremlin reportedly is undermined and has been undermined with a vast tunnel networks going back 1,000 years.
Right.
All right. and that there are no maps of what's underneath the Kremlin. Nothing complete. Nobody knows what's under there.
Yeah.
Evidently, Ivan the Terrible would reportedly go out on hunting trips with his buddies and then vanish. They couldn't find him. And then when they went back home, he'd be back in the throne room laughing at him. So they think that there were actually secret tunnel networks that went all over that area.
Yeah.
That evidently Ivan knew about them. Maybe they were secrets that only kings and people in his intelligence agents would know about. But evidently he knew about at least some of those tunnels underneath there.
Yeah. And it should be noted that in the LA Times in 1989, there was a story about a guy in Moscow who in the 1930s, him and his buddy were going to look for Ivan the Terrible's library under the Kremlin. Mm. And they found this secret tunnel.
Yeah.
And they kind of explored it and shit like that. And they ended up finding a bunch of skeletons down there.
And iron grates. One of the skeletons I remember hearing about was crucified on a cross.
Yeah.
On near one of those, it is creepy shit.
Yeah. So
this is all medieval stuff.
Yeah.
And in the medieval ages, the Russians were straight up barbarians, man. They were awful cool. They were like something out of World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the sad thing is, I mean, the guy in the 1930s, Ignatius Stiletsky, he actually did get permission to do some excavations under the Kremlin and stuff like that. He actually started thinking that the books were under there because of looking at different maps from different time periods and looking at different, texts from various, histories and whatnot. So he kind of started digging around under there and they didn't really find anything significant, but, you know, then he got sick and then the war came along and they never finished any of the excavations. So who knows? Could still be under there.
Now, one guy, it may have been him. He was down there digging around and, the tunnel nearly collapsed because it was raining at the time and, it collapsed because there was a train, a train car. You know, those old train cars that you used to have? A train car collapsed, in that area, but it's dangerous. I don't think they allow anyone to dig in those tunnel networks anymore.
No,
there's a modern city above it and they don't want cave-ins because, you know, you might knock a building down, you know?
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. And there's bad flooding problems.
Yeah.
That was another thing that I read about. They think that, maybe that library is down there, but chances are it's flooded with water.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
Which that would suck.
Because the engineers of Ivan the Terrible's day really weren't that good and they wouldn't have considered flooding to the same extent that you would today. Evidently, the floods in certain areas. Yeah. But there are tunnels down there that people haven't been in modern times.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of them are grated off with big iron grates and have been blocked off since the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
Weird.
It should be noted, too, that, the library might not be under there. Some people think that the books were destroyed in a fire.
Right.
And some people think that they just got dispersed over the years and are in various private collections or different collections. So, you know, they don't think it's all in one place anymore.
It's legendary.
But it is very legendary. And if anybody found it, that's like one of the great treasure hunts of the world. And actually, okay, the last thing I want to talk about, this was actually my favorite story of all of the ones that I researched. And I had never heard of this. And I'm sure it kind of went around the internet, I guess, a few years back, but I didn't hear about it. And I only found out about it accidentally when I was researching something else and I came across a newspaper article. And it was from The Guardian in 2004, rather. Now, it happened that in 2004, there were cops in Paris. And they were exploring a part of the Paris catacombs, which, you know, most people think of the catacombs and it's all the skeletons and stuff, which it is, but that's only about 5% of the catacombs. It's actually a lot of Roman quarries and all kind of different shit under there. And it just pretty much undermines the whole city. So the cops were down there on a training exercise. And they see this part that's closed to the public, and there's a sign across there that says, like, no public or no entry or something like that. And they said, we're the cops. We can go in there if we want to.
Mm-hmm.
So they go into this particular tunnel,
mm-hmm.
and then suddenly, you know, it's all dark in there and shit like that. And then suddenly they hear all these dogs barking, and they start freaking out, and they're like, what's going on? What's going on? They start flashing the lights around, And then they see like speakers, like a PA system.
Right.
That's where the dog barking is coming from. Someone has dog barking sounds burned on a CD. And so they go into this fucking tunnel in the Paris catacombs underneath the Trocadero. And they find a movie theater. There's a big screen in there. There's a projector. There's all these movies, 50s noir films, recent thriller films. And next to that, there's a little restaurant and a bar.
Man.
They find something on the ground that they actually at first thought it was a bomb.
Uh-huh.
And then later they found out it was a pressure cooker, which they used to make couscous in.
Okay.
So there is a fucking...
Somebody living down
yeah, there. Yeah. Well, there's a place. It had phone lines. It had electricity.
Down in the catacombs.
Down in the catacombs.
Okay.
And the cops were like, what the fuck is happening here?
Yeah.
3 days later, they come back to the same place. They come with a guy from the, you know, the French electric whatever. Because mm-hmm. they said, where is this electricity coming from? It must be pirated.
Right.
You know, the 3 days had passed. They come down to the same place. All the stuff is gone.
Hmm.
All that's left is a note that says, do not search.
Hmm.
And I was like, what the fuck is that about? And they're like, who the fuck was doing that?
And they didn't know for years.
And they didn't know for many years.
Yeah.
So I said, I got to find a follow-up on that because that is a fascinating fucking article. Turns out that this was built by this very strange, shadowy, elusive, mysterious cadre of people called the UX for Urban Experiment.
Okay.
They're not terrorists. They're not, but basically what they are is like, they're like the Frenchest thing imaginable because they are super into France's cultural history and they find it a shame that so much of the city, particularly the parts that are underground, are neglected and are falling into disrepair. So this loose group of people, they think there's about 100 of them in different teams. They're almost like hackers or they're like these weird, like underground artist types.
So it's a subculture.
Yeah.
Right.
And their whole mission is they find like various places, like it's either under the ground or, you know,
historical artifacts
that are being neglected,
mm-hmm.
and they will sneak around and fix them.
Yeah, they'll restore them.
Yeah. Which, and like I said, no one knew about them for years and years.
Right. What kind of things did they fix?
Well, their biggest thing happened in, actually, I don't think anyone found out about it until 2007. But this is very funny. What they ended up doing was there's a big building there called the Pantheon, and it had a big clock in it that hadn't worked since the 60s. And apparently one member of this, you know, loose consortium of people was a clockmaker, and he was like really bummed out that this beautiful clock wasn't working anymore. So he got 7 of the other members of this collective, and they basically... They didn't break into the Pantheon, but they kind of snuck in, like they sort of made fake IDs and stuff like that. And they went to this room, like up under the dome, and they set up like a whole fucking workshop in there without anybody knowing.
Hmm.
Like they had armchairs, they had internet access in there.
They had pirated power.
They had all their tools and all this other kind of stuff. And they fixed the clock.
Yeah, that was their mission. Their mission was to restore the clock. Without anybody knowing.
And
it started chiming out of nowhere when it got it done.
The sad thing about it, though, is that they did fix the clock. And then later they came forward and said, you know, we fixed it. You know, you're welcome.
Right.
And the French government was a little pissed at them. Actually, they kind of got, they got sued a couple times, but they won.
Yeah, they got to dismiss it.
Yeah, because
the judge said it was stupid.
Yeah, they didn't hurt anything. You know,
they're fixing shit. And this is the stuff that the French government isn't spending money on to keep in good shape or to keep it maintained.
Right.
So this subculture runs around and does basically the government's job for it, you know.
Pretty much.
Try to keep all its cultural heritage
in working order. It's weird because it was started by a bunch of teenagers.
Yeah.
In 1981. Now, I don't know if you guys know this, but
well,
I guess.
Hold on. We have to explain though what the theater was. they made that little theater down there because that's where they were having their meetings.
Well, they had film festivals.
Right. Yeah. So we didn't tell them that.
Yeah, but that's what they do. They had little like underground film festivals
eating
down there.
Eating couscous and drinking.
Yeah.
And that's what they did.
With their bar and everything like that. I just thought that's so fucking rad. But, well, because they said they're like in little teams, like they're 100 or so members, little teams that do different things, even though there's a lot of overlap. But, they all have like code names and all this other kind of shit. But I don't know if you guys know this, but in Paris, there's a thing called their cataphiles, which is basically people that like to go down in the catacombs and party and stuff like that. And, cause apparently there's a lot of entrance points. Now, technically, you're not allowed to go down into most of the catacombs cause it's dangerous and bloody, but they don't want the fucking, you know, heartache of finding your dead body down there or what have you. But that doesn't mean that a ton of people aren't doing that. And the people from the UX are pretty much saying it's very easy to like sneak around down there. And they have figured out how to pirate electricity, how to pirate phone lines. It's like all kind of shit. And the government is really can't really figure out how they're doing it. Like, you know, and but you know, they're saying, well, security is lax everywhere and all this other kind of shit. But like I said, they've been around since 1981. It started with a bunch of teenagers who were, you know, they kind of were sneaking around underground and stuff like that, but they thought, you know, if we can get underground this easily, it seems a shame to just, you know, party down here or get high or whatever, like a bunch of the other people were doing. They're like, let's do something, you know, worthwhile. So they ended up stealing a bunch of maps of like all the tunnels and all the, you know, phone lines and shit that, you know, underlie the city. And they started this kind of loose collective of these artists and shit like that. So, you know, they were unknown for a long time and they still pretty much cherish their secrecy. But they do have a couple spokespeople that'll come out every now and then. There have been a couple articles about them. There was one in Wired. There was one on Gizmodo.
So that's a trip. Remember like in Superman, you had Lex Luthor living underneath Metropolis, pirating his power and living in They got guys actually doing that.
Yeah.
Man, that's awesome.
And that's why this was like my favorite story. And I love that their whole reason is this, we're going to go under there and we're just going to have a film festival because they were super into the experience of film. And they would show like these kind of, they would show like, you know, they would do like a film festival of various themes, but they wouldn't tell you what the theme was. It's very artsy fartsy.
Yeah, it's all fucking
and then,
French.
Yeah, like I said, it's the Frenchest thing imaginable.
Yeah.
But like I said, they go and they fix stuff and they have like, I guess there was a robbery at the Museum of Modern Art there. Like a guy stole like a Picasso and a Modigliani and all this other kind of stuff. And apparently this group had an art show and they had somebody paint replicas of all of the stolen paintings. And then they had this art show like underground and shit like that. But that's their whole purpose for doing this kind of stuff is either to fix shit that's falling apart that the government won't fix, you know, because it's part of their cultural heritage, or, you know, they're going under there to have these kind of very French artistic experiences in all these unused spaces because they think it's a shame that all this space is not being utilized. So I thought that was so rad though. Like, that's so fucking rad. I love that somebody's doing that. So, you know, thumbs up, you guys over there in France.
Is that it? Is there anything else?
I think that's about it. And we're getting to the end of the show probably.
Okay. So we took them underground. There's a lot of underground stuff. Maybe we'll revisit this one.
Yeah, because this was, there was so much stuff that I
can't
had to
fit
leave
it all
out
in there.
I said I wanted to talk about the Edinburgh vaults and I wanted to talk about all that other kind of stuff, but we didn't even get to that.
We can do it again later.
Yeah, so we'll get to another one. And, again, I want to give a shout out to Project Entertainment Network. Please go to their Patreon and give them a buck or two and also go listen to all their other podcasts, including Necrocasticon, which had me on as a guest the other day. Also, we still have t-shirts. Go to www.zazzle.com/13o'clock and we still have the 5 t-shirts there. I promise I'm going to do a Crowley shirt.
Yeah.
Eventually. I'm working on it, I swear.
I had this idea for a Crowley shirt where it's just the eyes and above it says Crowley in the same motif as a Bauhaus shirt where you had
Peter Murphy's eyes.
Peter Murphy's eyes was at Bauhaus. Problem is, Crowley didn't have any hair in most of the photos.
And I can't put hair on him because then he won't be recognized.
Yeah.
And, like, if I use the picture of him where he's bald, then he looks like the zombie on the Dawn of the Dead poster.
You just gotta get the eyes somehow, but I don't know if that'd recognizably be Crowley.
That's what I mean. That's why I'm working on it, because I'm not quite sure. Yeah. I don't know. I'll come up with something. But anyway, and I was going to say something else. Oh, and you know how we always have like our little musical interlude at the end?
Yeah.
I wanted to put on that David Bowie song, Underground, like from Labyrinth, but I couldn't. Wouldn't let me download it.
Yeah.
But I did find, I'm going to play a little snippet of Going Underground by The Jam.
Okay.
Because I really dig The Jam. All so right. That'll be our musical interlude that'll play us out.
Our outro.
Our outro.
Okay.
So that'll do it for episode 26, Going Underground. And we'll see you next Tuesday.
See ya.
Bye.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.